The following programming is sponsored by
MBC Media.
The views expressed do not necessarily reflect this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And an eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here.
Good afternoon, Philadelphia, and welcome once again to the Conservative Voice on WWDB AM 860. This is Gary Heasley. I'm in the studio here with Ada Nestor. Hello, Ada.
Hello. Happy Friday.
Yeah, happy Friday
to
you.
It's October. We've made it to October. Can you believe it?
It is October, and we're going to be full of October surprises again, I think, as the first few days of October have already shown. Listen, you know, if you want to join this conversation as we go through this next 2 hours, please do so by dialing 888-329-3306, 888-329-3306. If you've got comments, we'd like to hear them. And we're going to have an interesting range of conversations. We'll start out this first half hour sort of talking about these October surprises that we've just found thrust upon us. And then we're going to speak to a gentleman named Rob Law, who's a director at AFPI. He was the Center for Homeland Security and Immigration, former chief of policy in the Department of Homeland Security. So, you know, because it was government, of course, he has a very, very long title, as they all do. But we'll talk to him about some of the things that are happening. And then at 1 o'clock, we're going to be joined again by Lieutenant Colonel Darren Gobb, the retired Lieutenant Colonel from that's been on with us like 4 or 5 times now. And we're going to talk about some of the tensions in the Middle East and sort of what Darren is seeing and what the risks are. You know, it's been just shocking to see what's happened, not just in the Middle East, but around the world since the Democrats seized power in 2020. And
chaos.
It's chaos unleashed worldwide on the world.
Worldwide chaos.
It is. It's unlike anything we've seen before. So we should have another good conversation with Darren. Now, to be looking ahead a little bit, on October 10th, we're going to have a town hall. Darren is going to...
the next one.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yep.
That's on the 24th. Darren's going to join us on the 24th for a town hall, a Keystone town hall. We'll do that in Malvern. And then we'll have him here in the studio for another session on the Conservative Voice the next day. So that's going to be great. We're very excited to have Darren coming to see us. Now, we'll do a town hall on the 10th.
Yeah.
And for that, we're going to go back and look into this article that popped out in the Inquirer just a couple of days ago.
Coincidentally, right after you meet.
It's amazing.
And go down there and, you know, illustrate what's going on in the city.
Yeah. 7 days after a walk in Kensington, this article breaks.
Right.
And we'll talk about this in a little bit. But the article basically says that what we found in Kensington in terms of what we believe to be a shockingly strong support for Donald Trump and for the nation, and a very strong desire to get away from these destructive policies that are ruining families and lives. Finally, it got to be so strong that the Inquirer couldn't hide it anymore. So they wrote this article. We'll talk about that. But on the 10th, we'll have in some of the people that were with us when we did the walk in Kensington. You know, we had Rock the Barber on last week, I think.
Yep.
Talked a little bit about the mentorship that he and his fellow barbers are providing because they're so tightly integrated into the community. Mm-hmm. We've got some other folks that we were with that day. You may have seen some of the clips that have been done for that on Instagram or on other social media sites. We're going to continue to push those out. But we'll do that on October 10th. And then on October 24th, we'll have Darren here for what's going to be a fascinating town hall.
And just so everyone knows, if you're listening on the radio, you can also watch a live stream of this show on Twitter at TC Voice WWDB. It's TC Voice WWDB. We're posting our content to that Twitter. And then our Instagram is also out there and super active. We're going to be getting a lot of information up there. And that's TC Voice on Instagram. So follow us on both.
Yeah, and we're going to be doing a lot more communication, so you know, keep track, and we'll be pushing out some information we think you might find interesting, might enjoy seeing. At 1:30 this afternoon, we're going to have Sean Logan. He's the chair of the Washington County PA Republican Committee.
Yeah,
and we're going to talk a little bit about Charleroi.
Which most people probably have no idea where the town is or what's even happening there. So we might be breaking some news here in Philly today.
Well, I got to tell you, I've spent some time in Washington County. I spent a bunch of time there a few years ago. And I've never heard of Charleroi until suddenly this news broke.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to do that at 1:30. And I think everybody that wants to keep track of what the real story is on the ground with this invasion, that's going to be a place to do it. That'll be a time to hear some frontline communication from Sean Logue.
Hint, it's not just in Ohio.
Oh, it's not. This is a nationwide phenomenon. You know, you don't bring 15 million people into this country without any resistance or control or process and expect it to be localized just to Texas.
And fund them. Fund them. We have been funding it.
Well, that's a critical point. And that comes down to, you know, this first discussion about what's going on in
Appalachia.
In North Carolina. So this is a mountainous region of everybody thinks North Carolina. Of course, they think of the beaches.
Right.
Right. I don't.
Because I don't either.
When I go to North Carolina, I typically go into the eastern Tennessee, western North Carolina, the mountain areas.
Beautiful.
It is stunning. Yeah. It is stunningly beautiful there.
That's our retirement plan. We want to be in the mountains down there. So it's been very hard to watch what's unfolded. Yeah, oh yeah. A cabin in the mountains with no neighbors and tons of acreage.
Well, that's
please.
A dream that I think many of us could get behind. Uh-huh. You know, I love the concept. So when you think about what's happened, so, okay, we had this storm that just, out of all expectations, took a path that was incredible, didn't dissipate in strength, somehow hit these mountains in a way that they hadn't been hit in 100 years.
Yep.
And so it's really not in very many people's lifetime that anything like this has happened before.
And I think people, because the lack of coverage, are really not understanding.
No, they're not.
What is going on.
But there's a critical point, and I talked to somebody in Asheville and some folks in Northeast Tennessee. And a critical element to this is that the media is constantly talking about every storm as if it's the end of mankind. And we know they do it for clicks, but they also do it to keep this hoax about the climate going, right? So when they said, take shelter, hide, the end is near, really people didn't take them very seriously. And then putting in the context of their life experience, they didn't really understand how severe this was going to be.
There was one person, one family, who said it was 17 minutes. They received the evacuate now warning, and 17 minutes later, they were inundated with water. And they went to evacuate, and as they were trying to make their way down the mountain, it was completely cut off by trees already.
Wow.
17-minute warning. You're in the mountains. You're a certain amount above sea level, and I'm sure in their minds they did not think what happened would happen.
You know, it's clear they didn't. You know, you've heard probably already about the manufacturing facility that just kept running.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't tell their employees to go home. They didn't tell them there was an emergency. And of course, if you're
told them they were fired, they would be fired if they left.
Yes. And you got to realize that in a factory environment, you don't have a phone ready at your hands. You know, you're not listening to the news while you're working on the equipment.
Yep.
When you're in a factory environment, your focus is entirely on the process that you're operating. It's on the equipment you're operating and on operating it safely.
Yeah. You're not doing one thing while also simultaneously looking at your phone and text messages.
That's right. In modern manufacturing, there's not a lot of multitasking going on when you're running equipment, right? And of course, that's born of, basically two centuries of safety practices that have developed, since the days of, just to go back to why, it's because when DuPont here in Delaware Valley, right down in Delaware, when they built new factories, those factories had an common practice of blowing up. Mm. They would start them and they'd blow them up.
Inconvenient.
It was very inconvenient.
Yeah.
And so the family would be up on the hill looking down at the factory down by the river, and boom, you know, they lose all their employees and all their equipment. And so they decided to have managers begin starting up equipment lines, and all the explosions stopped because the equipment lines ended up being designed better and installed properly and started up properly. So you got a couple hundred years of safety protocol that says, when you're at work at a factory like that, you stay focused on the task. You stay focused on the equipment and the process. You're watching what you need to watch to make sure everyone is safe, meaning you're not watching the news.
Right.
In an odd twist of fate, it's 200 years of safety protocols that caused those people to die, because if they had somehow been able to be distracted and known what was going on, they might have gotten out.
They might have left earlier.
But for a management team not to evacuate its facility in a situation like that, I know there's a criminal investigation going on. These people are in real trouble.
Yeah.
I mean, this is real trouble. So this hits. It hits harder than anyone expected. It hits in a way that is just disastrous. and epic. And so suddenly these rivers and streams in the mountains turn into raging torrents. It's like the flash floods in the West.
Yep. Well, it's also the way that their water systems work up there. They have the lakes, the locks, they let them down gradually. So from the top of the mountain to the bottom, there's, you know, a, supposed to be a gradual process. But with the amount of rain they got, that was just completely, they failed. I think every dam was near fail level through the entire event. And so I think, you know, there's mismanagement. I've read a lot of backstories prior to this hurricane hitting from Asheville. Just recently, they had some kind of freezing event where all their pipes froze, and they had a serious issue and needed to replace pipes down there. So there have been longstanding and pre-existing issues in this region. And I think part of it is because it is so hard to access.
You know, the access is also this critical point. A lot of people saw the images of Highway 40, right, which comes out of North Carolina and into Tennessee. And you could see that it parts of it, half of it was just gone.
Yeah, it just fell into the water.
Yeah, and this wasn't a little gap. This was a long stretch of highway, a very, you know, it would take a very long time to fill that back in or repair that.
How do you, I mean, the water is still running in such a way where that highway used to be. How do you run a highway there again?
Well, that's right. And so now you've got these rivers gorged. You know, I was hearing from someone in Asheville that a 3-foot river, you know, normally it's a place you go and you sort of do the lazy river ride.
Right.
Suddenly it's at 12 feet deep.
Yeah.
Raging torrent. Mm-hmm. And people are being swept away. Actually, there's a like a brew pub that this gentleman used to go to. It's completely gone.
I saw one of their trailers crumple like a small can of goods
just
on
crushed.
A telephone pole outside an apartment complex.
Well, so you see this kind of raging torrent streaming down and wiping out buildings and homes.
Everything.
And then you come to Chimney Rock, where basically, I guess, the whole town's been just destroyed.
Yeah.
I know people that were there this year.
Swannanoa. I think, I mean, the majority of those towns outside of Asheville, even Asheville, though, I mean, if you look at their business district, there's nothing. It looks like an explosion went off. There is nothing but foundations left.
Talking to people down there, what I'm hearing is that folks are just going to move.
Yeah.
You know, we've got such a portable economy for a lot of people now, and people move to Asheville because it's this beautiful Carolina mountain town, and, you know, it's a university town. It, you know, not everybody down there is a conservative, right? It's kind of a leftist community in the middle of the mountains. Mm-hmm. So sort of an
artsy.
They call it artsy.
It's which an artsy
means,
community.
Yeah, which means communist. And so a lot of people move there. Well, now those people looking around and all the little shops and all the little bakeries are gone, or whatever restaurants they love to frequent, those are gone.
Well, and the families too, they have no idea when the schools will be reopening. It's the beginning of the school year. I think a lot of families are making decisions to move either temporarily or permanently to make sure their kids' quality of life and normalcy is returned as soon as possible.
Yeah. So some of these folks are just going to pull up stakes and leave. And the belief is that Asheville itself isn't even going to be the same for many years to come. It's going to take them, you know, 5, 6, 7 years to get that sorted out and return it to this idyllic place it was. So we're looking at mass exodus from anybody that's portable. Right, people that just moved in to take advantage of this wonderful place. But the people who've been always there, the generational residents, the people that have really built the mountain towns and lived in the mountain towns for, you know, 2 centuries, they're going to have a different reality.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that many people in that area had flood insurance.
No.
They've not seen anything like this in at least 100 years. But really, do they really expect to be flooded?
No.
And I just hope that somehow there's a way for this to get sorted out, because if you've just lost your business and your home and somehow your insurance doesn't cover flood and you're making, you know, median income, hopefully, or less, there's no way to rebuild.
Right.
You can't rebuild in 5 years or 10 years. It won't work in a lifetime. If you've been wiped out to that level, it's going to be financially impossible to recover.
If not for mismanaged funds, there would be plenty of money to help them rebuild.
Alas, there's the federal issue. Mm. You know, when you think about the role of government, which we talk about all the time.
Daddy?
Turns out they're not your daddy. Turns out. You know, it is not the role of government to help change your child's gender.
No.
It is not the role of government to pay the pensions of people in Ukraine. It turns out.
Shocking.
Yes. It turns out
that's not what they told me,
no,
though.
No. You know, stocking the school libraries with pornography, not the government's job.
They think it is.
They do.
Mm-hmm.
It is their job to defend the border. It's the one thing they refuse to do. It is their job in a situation like this where there's a catastrophic emergency to deploy the resources necessary to extract the people that are stuck in this nightmare.
6 days.
6 days for what?
6 days they kept active military locked on the tarmac, screaming at them, demanding to be given their orders. I think it's Title 10 orders to go and assist in that region. The government took 6 days to approve them to deploy. Meanwhile, let's just, we'll work this right in. The people who brought in their personal planes and helicopters to rescue and or drop off supplies and both, mind you, thinking about the helicopter size and what we're dealing with out here in the mountains, the smaller helicopters have a much better opportunity to land and get into these smaller properties on the mountains. They were being threatened with arrest. Supplies were being confiscated, all while the military was not allowed to deploy. There's layers of evil that have occurred in this catastrophe in the South.
So is there any way to get into some of these communities? Well, it turns out there's one way, hiking.
Yep.
So there's a story.
Mules.
They were using mules.
Yeah.
So that's two.
That might be I'll have to share this on our social media. The man with the mules with the braided beard, he may be the coolest man on planet Earth. I told my husband last night, I don't know if we'll ever find anyone cooler than this dude. Right. It's like he came right out of Gold Rush America and was like, let me help.
You know, it's like the Cajun Navy that always shows up in Louisiana and Florida and Alabama, Mississippi.
Yeah.
But the problem here is they can't just
boat.
You just can't start up the aluminum boat, pull the Johnson motor on and the Evinrude and go rescue people from rooftops.
Governor DeSantis said the same thing when he sent his resources to North Carolina and Tennessee and Georgia. He said, this is not the situation we have here in Florida where you can get in a boat and access these people by just driving up to their front porch on the boat. There is not that capability in the mountains. I feel like all week I've had to say, they're in the mountains, guys. In the mountains.
And the roads are gone.
The roads are gone.
And so you've got hiking, you've got mules, and you've got helicopters.
And the helicopters are restricted by the tree damage.
And you're being told, well, whatever you do, don't fly your helicopter in here.
Right.
I mean, this is egregious what's happening.
Greg Biffle's out there flying his personal helicopter with a whole team of people.
And now who's Greg Biffle?
NASCAR racer.
I wouldn't know that.
See, this is why I belong in the mountains of North Carolina.
Yeah, well, I tell you, it is the people there are wonderful. So there's a story that's up on Revolver News right now. It says Sam Perkins hiked 11 miles and 2,200 feet to check on his parents after Hurricane Helene devastated the North Carolina mountains. He found them safe but stranded, surrounded by destroyed roads, mudslides, and fallen trees. Crews are working to restore power, but the devastation is overwhelming. This is just one of the stories. But this idea that somebody could deploy a helicopter that is a private asset and they're going to go in and fly in to get people out. And we've heard story after story of rescues being done by private helicopter. And then the government turns to them and says, stay out. And then turns to the volunteers and says, don't go. We don't want any more people coming in. But then there's no massive response by the government either.
Yeah, I mean, it would be one thing. I think people would feel comfortable not taking a step back and not rushing to the scene if we saw the government resources being fully deployed. But people are not seeing that, and they're not able to get access to their loved ones and family and friends. And so they're taking it upon themselves to go in and check themselves.
Right. And so where did we come to? Okay, so we came to a place where the government won't defend the nation. The government won't respond to an extraordinary crisis. You know, we don't expect them to show up because it snowed a little bit, right? I mean, just plow the roads as planned. I mean, but this is not normal. This is extraordinary. And people are dying.
Still, people are dying right now.
You're going to get a muted response to that. Finally, Biden goes down. And of course, you know what happens when he shows up?
They shut down the airspace.
All the airspace. And so who can't fly?
No one else.
So there are no helicopters going in pulling people out. Now, you got people that are on oxygen that have hours to get out. You've got infants and children that are starving. People that don't have food, and maybe if they don't have power, they probably don't have water. Yep. I think many of the people in the mountain towns are probably on wells, some of them, right? Some of them on municipal.
But they're advising not to use your well water if at any point it was covered by the flood water.
And so now the wells are spoiled or inoperable. You've got the municipal units are down. So you've got, you know, food, if it's in a freezer, it might last a little while, yep. but it's basically gonna, it's got a spoilation problem unless mm-hmm. it's just boxed, high processed food. You know, so what we should see here is a massive launch. Let's pretend it's a foreign country we're invading and let's deploy every military helicopter we can. Just take the missiles off and put food on.
Right. We can just rename North Carolina, Ukraine, and I mean, the resources should come flooding into the zone, just, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, every helicopter in the country would be headed that way. You know, just tell Lindsey Graham.
North Ukraine.
Yeah, tell Lindsey Graham that there's a war to be fought in North Carolina if you could just, but the way to fight this one is with food and water. Mm-hmm. And you know, as long as he thinks somebody's at war, he's behind it.
And there's looters. I mean, there's real problems happening in the area. There's not enough help for these people.
Yeah, there's really not enough enough help. The response has been muted. And then this idea of turning away volunteers. Now, we're not talking about volunteers that just show up in their polo shirt and their shorts with a sneakers. Yeah, I mean, these are equipped people.
They're bringing their equipment, their horses, all of it.
Right. Yeah. And they're turned away.
Yeah. And threatened with arrest.
And they're not replaced. Mm-hmm. So again, this to me is an egregious situation. And it seems to be one of the October surprises. Now, there is another element to this. You know, if you notice what happened in East Palestine, Ohio, when the train derailed and the muted response by both the Pennsylvania government and the federal government, if you look at this muted response and you realize that both of those areas voted predominantly for Donald Trump.
You know, Asheville is very liberal, though.
Not Asheville.
Right.
But around it,
the surrounding
in the mountains.
Areas, yeah.
And then, of course, the stories of nefarious intent begin to evolve, right? Okay, so everyone knows, well, not everyone knows, but it is certainly the case that lithium mines have been being developed in North Carolina. I know this. I've looked at one of them. Lithium mines have been around in North Carolina for several years now, new developments. You know, there's some quartz under there, and of course, there's beautiful land. So you go back to Lahaina and look at what happened in Lahaina. Well, what happened? They turned vehicles around and sent them back into the flames. People died because they were turned around by police. You've got then, remember the wall they put up so no one could see what was going on in Lahaina?
Yeah.
And then we start hearing stories where the governor comes out and says, well, listen, we're going to buy all the land and seize that as the government. And then we're going to build a sort of dormitory housing where people can work, can live if they're going to serve the billionaires. Lahaina was quickly moved off the screens, but that story was bizarre. Mm-hmm. The way the government reacted and didn't react to Lahaina. And yet we see it again in East Palestine and we see it again here. So when people are sitting back and saying, we're being subjected to an invasion, irresponsible spending by government and irresponsible monetary policy has driven extraordinary inflation, which has really drained the prosperity of average American families, right? When you look at it and say, we're not responding to things like East Palestine, Lahaina, and now North Carolina and Tennessee, we're not responding to those with the kind of American spirit we had in the past where we rallied around those in trouble.
Let's correct that with the government is not responding, but the people are.
That's a great point. It is one specific party here that's not doing it. And it's the same party then that says, we will not defend the border. So now you've got the fentanyl deaths. We're at least at 400,000 now. Mm-hmm. You've got the report that came out confirming what we've been talking about for a long time, that 320,000 children trafficked into this country. No one knows where they are.
Yeah.
Some are undoubtedly with friends and family. Some are undoubtedly in labor situations, and many, many are being abused physically.
Sexually. I'm still waiting for AOC's big video for her missing kids video. Remember what she did? It is
interesting that these people are so disingenuous that they're very happy to go down and pretend that these pictures of kids in cages were from Donald Trump when they knew.
They were from Barack Obama Joe Biden.
And now we've got a really serious situation where children are being harmed every single day. If we could hear the screams, this nation would never sleep again.
Yep.
And all this is happening. So you've got this, the invasion, you've got the trafficking, you've got the drugs that are killing people. I mean, proactively in large numbers. And much larger numbers than before the Democrats seized power. You've got the muted response to Americans in trouble. And then we all have to stop and ask ourselves, what is going on in our country?
Mm.
What is it that this is about? It is a war on America.
Chaos.
And it's a war on America by its own government. You know, the people that are flying their own helicopters are typically capable people.
Yeah.
Of course, one of the people that the leftists love is Harrison Ford.
Do they?
Oh, I think they love him.
Oh, I don't know.
I thought he was... I could be wrong. I don't follow this celebrity
that
much.
I assume every celebrity out there is doing what Diddy was doing just for different masters, so I don't follow the fame too much anymore. But sure, okay. I mean, he was married to that one girl who was pretty liberal, so Calista Flockhart.
Did he marry that woman?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, well, either way, he used to fly rescue missions in the mountains and pull people out that were in skiing accidents and things, or skiing, you know, got trapped. Mm-hmm. It's not a new thing that citizens fly in a helicopter to help. It's a new thing that we tell them no, when the helicopter's needed and the people are in need and need the help. So let's list the October surprises then. We had the dock workers strike. We had, of course, DeSantis's perfect response to that, where he said, I'm going to put the National Guard on the docks. We're going to resume operations. We're going to make the docks work as best we can. We're not going to succumb to this. And the next day there's a settlement.
No, psych, never mind. Please don't come work at our dock.
Well, you know, honestly, I was expecting that to build into a Kamala Harris as hero opportunity, right?
That's what I thought we were looking at,
me too. I think they totally missed this one by not sending her in with a prearranged deal, give their union guys all they want, and then run around talking about what a great asset to the country she is.
I will say, I think they were disappointed and surprised, because when I did see interviews with the dock workers who were protesting, and the anchor was silly enough to ask them who they're voting for, or to raise their hands if they're supporting Harris, none of them raised their hands. So I thought that she would come in on her white horse.
Me too.
And fix it all so that she could take all the credit. Or if they really believe Donald Trump's going to win in November, which I do think they know at this point, they would let it get worse.
That's right. It could go one of two ways. But it's suspended. They got a 62% raise over 6 years. They've got now till January, well after the election, to work out the final negotiations.
However, I think it's January 15th. What day does the new president get sworn in?
Oh, that would be the 21st, 22nd?
20th,
something like that.
So their strike looms five days before that.
That's interesting.
Uh-huh.
So you know, this is the old contract was $39 an hour. The new contract base pay is $63 an hour.
Yeah.
So this is a groundbreaking change, and yet the support in the unions is still for Donald Trump because they know this isn't some gift from Democrats.
No.
I just thought there would be more theater around it. I was surprised that they missed the opportunity.
And listen. Everyone who bought all of the toilet paper in Costco, here's your news. The strike is over. Go lay in your toilet paper fort and think about what you've done.
Well,
honestly.
And the thing with that is you can't take that stuff back.
No. And toilet paper is made in America, folks. Like, do better next time. You don't need to buy that much toilet paper. You can still get it. Oh,
I'm always surprised by the rush.
Why is that always the first thing?
I'm always surprised by the rush to toilet paper.
I know.
And so... So this has been fascinating. So we got the strike. We've got Lahaina, North Carolina.
Yeah.
Kind of the same situation.
Sure.
We've got the, I don't know what you really call him, Sean Combs, P. Diddy, Puff Daddy. How many, this guy has more names than I could ever count for. Now, this thing is getting big. This also, I expected they would just kill him, or they would do something like they did with Epstein, you know, put him in jail and knock him off. It turns out they're not.
No.
They're letting him... apparently this is going big.
Listen, the powers that be have a very specific method of madness when it comes to quieting down the uproar. They will arrest one high profile individual. They will prosecute him to the ninth degree.
Mm-hmm.
And then they will say he was the only one. Let's look at the most recent example of that. You have Jeffrey Epstein, Ghislaine Maxwell, who was convicted for trafficking. And yet, where did she traffic those children to? Who were the clients? Nothing since then. They got her, they got Jeffrey, and then they expect us to just be quiet and go away. So if folks think Diddy is the only one that's been doing this, you should think about who he came up under, and you should think about who came up under him, and know that this is going to expand so greatly that people can't even wrap their heads around it now.
What I think the difference is this time is the nature of the victims. You know, the kids that were on that island, no one's ever heard from again.
And these were American kids.
These are American kids, some of whom are still around. They're actors and actresses. Some of
Justin Bieber.
People whose careers either blossomed or was ruined.
Yep.
And all of them are looking at this and saying, I got a shot at being compensated.
Right.
And you've got attorneys that are stepping up to the mic and being very bold in public. Is there a chance that, unlike Ghislaine Maxwell and Epstein, we end up with an actual exposure here where what the reality is exposed? So it's not just those of us that pay a lot of attention, but average Joe and Jane Main Street can find out what's going on. Is that where we are? That could be where we are.
I hope so. I've been screaming about the abuse and trafficking of children for like 7 years now. People have called me insane. But the question I ask now is, if you found out these people that you idolize, that you think are the coolest people and look up to and share with your children, are trafficking children, are sexually abusing children, are manipulating people, would you stay quiet or would you speak up and use whatever influence you had to let other people know that it was happening? Sure, they thought I was crazy back then, but they can still think I'm crazy today. I was crazy and right. And imagine how insane you go when you find out something like that's going on.
Well, that's
you feel helpless. I felt helpless.
The fact that this is happening in the name of the United States and all the other things that these globalists are doing is troubling to me. Because if we ever get called as a nation to pay the bill for what's been done, you know, those 320,000 kids that disappeared, well, some of them have family that will have cases they'll bring. You know, there is a bigger court, if you will, where this nation could be judged for some of the things that we are allowing to happen. And you know, even though
it would be fair to judge us for it.
Well, it kind of would. And even though it's not the American people, who I think are fundamentally good people, that are doing this, it is being done in their name. And they're allowing it. They're allowing it. They're either looking the other way. They're looking away. Look, if it's going to interfere with their vacation, they're not paying attention. So
their social status or their friend group, or will people think that they've lost their minds? Yeah.
Right. I mean, God forbid we offend a leftist. You know, we don't want to be called names, so we're just going to let this happen. At some point, the American people have to simply say no more. And I think the time for that right now is November 5th.
Yeah.
November 5th is where we have to come out and say, we're done with our food being poisoned. We're done with medicine that makes you sick. We're done with an invasion of this nation that is going to fundamentally transform our society.
And you're going home.
And you're going home.
and your free stay is now over.
Right. And we're done with wars that we can't explain. Now, we've got a guest that's going to join us now. We mentioned this at the opening of the show. With us now is Rob Law, a director at American First Policy Institute. Rob, welcome to the Conservative Voice.
Hey, it's good to be with you today. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for joining. You know, you've heard a few minutes of this conversation, so you kind of get a sense of where we're going. We're rolling into October. The October surprises are stacking up. But some of the things that we're seeing, of course, are the things that have been plaguing this country now for 4 years. And tell us a little bit about your background. When you were at DHS, what were you doing? What was your role?
Well, thanks. And I had the great privilege of serving in the Donald Trump administration as the chief of policy at U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services within the department. And so what my responsibility was to issue regulations and policies that comported with the law and, most importantly, put the American people first. And really, that shouldn't be such a novel thing. And you'd say, well, doesn't every administration do that? And clearly the answer is no. And you see that, you know, the most glaring example is the monstrosity and atrocity that has been occurring over the last 3.5 years by the reckless and unlawful policies of the Biden-Harris administration that have made American communities more dangerous, has facilitated unprecedented human trafficking of vulnerable migrant children, and has enabled the most dangerous of criminals and gangs to infiltrate American cities.
You know, it's just astonishing what we're talking about. I keep telling people we're having the craziest conversations. The problem is that they're factual. You talk about gangs that have penetrated the U.S. We now know how to pronounce Tren de Aragua, or at least that's the way I pronounce it. I'm not sure that's the way a Venezuelan would pronounce it, but that's the way I do.
A gang none of us knew existed prior to this year, I think.
Never heard
of it. Or maybe some of us knew, but maybe not all of us.
It's not just that the gangs that have been here are getting more powerful. We're introducing new criminal organizations that are really aggressive. I mean, so when you think about this, if you're at DHS and you're implementing these policies, When you were implementing policy, how would you have responded to this? What would you have done at DHS under Trump? I just can't imagine this happens under a Donald Trump administration.
Well, you're right, and it doesn't happen, and it wouldn't have happened. And you know that Venezuelan gang did not have a foothold in the United States. Now, of course, we've had issues with MS-13 from El Salvador for a long time, but the Venezuelan gang did not have a foothold, did not have a presence in the United States. This has all occurred in just the last 3.5 years. And so I think the critical difference among many is during the Trump administration, we put a high priority on screening and vetting, that you were not going to come into our country unless and until we knew who you were and decided that you were eligible to be in our country. And this administration has completely flipped that logic. They have said, we're going to let the entire world in, and maybe we'll figure out who you are someday down the road. And as we've continued to learn time and time again, you just had a recent report that came out yesterday that I believe it said 1.7 million special interest aliens have found their way into our country. And what that means is their behaviors and travel patterns mirror those of known terrorists. So some of them may just be coincidental, but I bet a lot of them are not.
Right.
But that's the reality that we are contending with today, because this administration does not believe that asylum fraud is a thing. It very much is. And they don't believe in screening and vetting. They just want to facilitate the mass catch and release of as many, you know, migrants as they possibly can. And they're just playing a very dangerous game that, you know, the next, you know, Lake and Riley situation is not going to happen. But it is. They're playing a very dangerous game that the next terrorist attack isn't going to happen. And it hasn't happened yet, but when you even have the FBI director saying that the lights are blinking red, that sort of government speak for we're in a very precarious situation, and we're only fortunate that nothing bad has happened yet in that regard.
But what you just said is a critical point. The director of the FBI comes out and says, it's not a matter of if, but when. Every light on the dashboard is red. We've got these, you know, these elements in the country now that we know are here that weren't here before, and those that were here before but now are more powerful, making more money, they have more resources. And so what we're going to do about that is, well, that'd be nothing. We're going to do nothing. We're not going to protect the border, and we're not going to take action internally to begin moving these people back to their home countries. What we're going to do is we're going to let the American people sit where they sit and wait for the first attack, or wait for someone to burst into their home, or somebody to kill their kid on the way to school, or rape their daughter, because we planned for this. It wasn't an accident. This isn't incompetence.
They created an app for it to facilitate it. You go to CBP One.
That's right.
And you don't have to give a real name. There is no ID requirement. And you let them know under which bridge you would like to meet to be entered into the country.
So, Rob, how is it possible that the government knows what you just said to be true? You didn't pull that out of thin air. It's reported in our papers. We heard about Tren de Aragua first showing up in New York, the National Guard looking for their tattoos. Then we hear they're in Chicago. Now we hear
Colorado.
They're in Colorado. Aurora. Now they're in Texas showing up. You know, how is it that the government, the federal government, just says, we're busy.
No,
we're not responding.
Well, it's absolutely baffling. And really the best answer I can come up with is you have a political left that does not believe in the sovereignty of the United States, that they believe that everybody and anybody, whether you're an economic migrant or a criminal gang member, if you want to come to the United States, then we will help facilitate that. And I'm so glad that you touched on the CBP One app, because what I think a lot of people don't realize is that that app did exist previous to this administration, but it was meant for screening. It was meant for screening cargo. So basically, think of this, a truck driver is approaching a border port of entry, and he says, hey, I'm about 20 miles out. And they would say, okay, based off of traffic patterns, go to this lane. And it was only about cargo, but they hijacked this app. And they manipulated it and they changed it to turn it into this facilitation of scheduling your unlawful entry. And so I think a lot of questions need to be asked about who did that? Who made that technical change to the app? Were foreign companies or foreign actors involved in that? You know, what's going on with the data that underpins it? And so it's not just that the app exists. that app was created in some way that we don't know about. And I think there's a lot of questions that Congress and the American people deserve answers for.
Listen, I just want you to know that Gary tells me all the time that I am unsurprisable and unshockable. And I just hope that you go on our Twitter feed and watch that moment where you tell me that that was meant for products and not humans. And you'll see the shock on my face. I am absolutely stunned at that information.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. And so, but let's help people understand. How is this app being used? Just to clarify a bit, Rob, how is the app being used now?
So here's how the app is being used. It's very simple. You pull it up, you plug in whatever name and nationality you want to claim. There's no verification. You're not submitting a picture of a passport or anything like that. And that you hit send. And then basically our federal government will say, okay, you may show up at this port of entry at this time, and we will waive you into the country. That's as simple as it is. There's no screening and vetting. And we're taking you at your word that you are who you say you are. They're not running any database checks or anything else, not to mention that it's completely an unlawful use of the parole authority. And then they'll go and gaslight the American people and claim that this is a lawful pathway, when really all it is just organized and structured mass illegal immigration.
Yeah.
I apologize for repeating what you just said slightly differently, but I need to say this. You're saying they put in whatever name they choose to use. They put in whatever nationality they choose to use. They hit send. There's no verification that they're even from the country that they claim. There's no verification that that name is a name that they have. They have no need to present an ID, no need to present a passport. I can't go to Mexico or Canada without a passport.
Right.
But they can come here, and the government waves them in and then gives them money, housing, plane rides, whatever they need to go wherever they want to live.
And let's touch on that for just one second. FEMA has allocated $650 million to illegal aliens this year. I think it was in the 400,000 range the previous year in 2023. And now we're being told we don't have money for emergency for hurricane season.
And
that is just FEMA. So it's a misallocation of funds. They are funding the invasion.
Of their own country.
Yeah.
So again, you know, they used to always call this chaos at the border. And I spent a lot of time saying, wait, it's not chaos. They used to say, well, it's a crisis. Well, it's not a crisis. It's a strategy being implemented and executed almost perfectly. And when you think about this discussion that we just had on this app, you don't just stumble into that. That's something that someone sat down and proactively did and made the decision that we're going to get around all the immigration laws. We're going to get around all the immigration controls, and we're going to let anyone who wants to come here in. And then they started flying them in.
Mm. Oh, but fact checkers are saying they're not flying them in.
But we know they're flying them in.
Thank you.
They're flying them in. 30,000 a month. And, you know, you say, well, why are they doing that? Well, it's obvious, because you don't get to see them arrive. And so you're making another form of illegal immigration disappear. You don't have that embarrassing drone footage, you know, that you had in 2021 and 2022 of large numbers of illegal aliens crossing over the Rio Grande or in Arizona. And again, they're just hiding it. And so what they're doing now, and it's very strategic, and you guys have absolutely nailed it, that this is all intentional. They know exactly what they're doing.
Yep.
Is because they're funneling people to the ports of entry with the CBP One app, or they're flying them in. They're claiming that the border numbers are going down.
Yep. I heard that
that's
yesterday.
Just because And it's just because the Border Patrol is less busy because everybody's at the port.
Yep.
And they're pretending that that is not illegal immigration. And so when you add all of these numbers up, we are still at historically high levels of mass illegal immigration. It's unsustainable. And at the back end of this, there are record low numbers of illegal aliens being removed or deported from our country, including thousands of convicted murderers, rapists. I mean, the laundry list of crimes, that not just charges, but convictions, and they're not using detention beds for them, and they're not putting them on airplanes to deport them. And so they're making a conscious decision that these bad actors should remain in our country. They haven't just violated our immigration laws. They violated our civil and criminal laws as well. But apparently that isn't enough for this administration to enforce the law.
You know, you touched on a lot right there. This to me is, again, it's proactive. It's not incompetence. It's not an accident. It's treason. when you're doing this and you're specifically doing this knowing that the director of the FBI is going to come out and say, oh yeah, we've got now Trende Rockwell, we've got all these other gangs that are more powerful. We are just now seeing tens of thousands of military-aged Chinese that could be sent by the CCP. We know that the people that control our immigration at the border are the cartels, not us, right? Anyone the cartel delivers, we take. And now you're flying them in without checking to see who they are. It is a conspiracy, not a conspiracy theory. It's a conspiracy documented to bring in people who represent a fundamental threat to this nation and to bring people in for the other specific purpose, two other purposes, one of which, of course, is low-cost labor. And then there's the third issue, which is, of course, delivering the children that will be trafficked. And all of that is happening in huge numbers, and the American people are accepting it, which is, to me, astonishing.
Could I just add one more piece of the puzzle that most Americans have no clue is going on right now while all of these people are coming unidentified across our border and into our country? Hamza bin Laden is alive, mm-hmm. and he is in charge of al-Qaeda, mm-hmm. and he has been married off and brought other groups into his fold, mm-hmm. and they are training terrorists. They are looking for vengeance on the Western world. And we're just letting people make up their own names and come across our border?
Right. And then there's the funding issue. Now, Rob, we've heard reports that the federal government is sending money to effectively, I guess, the Taliban, al-Qaeda.
Billions.
They're sending, you know, somewhere between 40 and, say, 80 million a week or something. Have you heard these stories?
I haven't heard that specific one, but I've heard similar things, especially like with the Iranian regime and other, you know, bad actors who have, you know, malintent towards the United States. And it just seems that we have an administration that is trying to enrich, empower, and embolden all of our adversaries across the globe. And that's why I think you see the resulted chaos that is unfolding on the world stage.
Well, yes. Let's be clear. Chaos is a ladder, right? To some people, they think that if they create enough chaos and confusion, they can rule over the embers.
Right. Well, that's the phrase, right? An evil man will destroy his own nation or will burn his nation to the ground that he may dance on the ashes or that he may rule over the ashes. You know, there are a couple of ways that gets said, but it's the reality that people will burn their own nation to the ground to gain power.
And there's no way to say that we're not witnessing some sense of that, some form of that happening to increase the despair of the American people, to make their mm-hmm. life more difficult while helping and supporting others who don't belong here, who have not come here legally. I'm a huge supporter of legal immigration. I think that makes our country incredible. But there needs to be vetting, not an open border.
Right, right. And so, Rob, how do you... there's another thing that has been said repeatedly, that in order to seal the border, to defend the nation, there was a requirement that this bipartisan bill get passed. The bipartisan bill that was going to be passed to protect our border security bill, was the only chance we had to stop this invasion. The U.S. government is bereft of efficient or effective resources to defend the nation. Is that right?
It's not right. And I'm so glad that you brought this up. And it's so frustrating as somebody who has worked in this space for so long. And really all you need to do is actually read the bill. The rhetoric behind it was one thing, but here's the reality of that bill. It would have institutionalized the border crisis that we're currently experiencing. It would have allowed 1.8 million illegal aliens minimum per year into the country. It did absolutely nothing to restore the Remain in Mexico policy, the number one most effective policy of the Trump administration on border security. It would have mandated a nationwide catch and release policy, which means nobody's being detained. You show up at the border and we hand you over to an NGO using our taxpayer dollars to relocate you to the American community of your choice. Do you know who benefited from catch and release? Lakin Riley's murderer. So you cannot tell me that this is a serious border security bill when you are enabling the release of everybody that shows up. It created this convoluted new process to hear claims that I don't think would have worked, and I actually think it was designed to fail. And at the end of the day, it accounted for zero deportations. So I don't even call it a border bill. It was an immigration bill.
Right.
And it was really sort of that precursor to amnesty, I think, because people who actually do qualify for asylum they can become a lawful permanent resident and then eventually a U.S. citizen. What I think this bill was designed to do was to change who was making those decisions. And all of a sudden, you see an approval rate that is lower than 10%. I think they were going to use this bill to allow the wokest bureaucrats to start rubber stamping approvals of asylum and put millions of illegal aliens who should not qualify for asylum onto a path to U.S. citizenship. So that's what that bill was actually about. And at the end of the day, not a single piece of legislation is needed to secure the border.
Right.
Because all of the authority that President Trump used is still there. They are refusing to use it. And I think that's very telling.
And as Chad Wolf told us when he was on with us last time, the Biden administration went through and removed the protections and the orders that Donald Trump had had in place that kept us safe. And there's interesting, there's two stories out of Mexico this week. The one story out of Mexico was on our southern border, and it indicated or alleged that the Mexican military was helping to facilitate the people coming into our country.
Mm-hmm.
The other story is just from yesterday, and apparently Mexican soldiers had opened fires on migrants coming through their southern border, okay? And it was six migrants who were killed. Do you want to know where they were from? They were from Egypt, Peru, and Honduras.
Wow.
Egypt. So, Rob, correct me if I'm wrong here, but originally when you were claiming asylum, the rule was first country, right? The first country you come to, you need to claim asylum in that country. Was that always the way that things were?
Well, you're exactly right. That's how it's supposed to be, because yeah. if you are truly fleeing persecution,
right.
you go to the first safe country. And instead, what we see is what I call forum shopping, where they're not looking. First off, they're not fleeing persecution.
Right.
They have lots of reasons for what they're doing, but they're purposely choosing the United States. In many cases, these are people who have left their home country and have resettled somewhere else for many, many, many years. But when you have the Biden-Harris administration signal that the border is open and all are welcome, they say, you know what? I'm going to take advantage of that invitation. And that's why you see the problem morphed from, you know, a problem of Mexican and Northern Triangle country nationals showing up at the southern border. Now it is a global problem. Yeah. You've had encounters from over 170 different countries around the world. I mean, that's just absolutely astonishing.
It was
unheard of. It's unprecedented.
Now, it is. I mean, this discussion we're having is utterly ridiculous. The fact that this is a discussion we're having inside
discussion.
The United States of America,
yeah.
and that it's real.
Real.
Yeah.
This is real
This
stuff.
Is ridiculous. Now, I've seen Kamala Harris's immigration plan. So we're being told that she's vice president. She has no power or authority. She's just hanging out in case they need her. She's not actually part of the administration now that people are unhappy with all of their policies. And so she's going to implement her own policies when she comes. Now, have you had a chance to consider what Kamala Harris might implement if she comes into the presidency?
Oh, absolutely. It's going to be, number one, more of the same. And then if you read the Democrat National Committee platform, the DNC platform that she adopted at their convention, it calls for passage of the U.S. Citizenship Act. And people say, oh, what is that? That sounds nice. This is an amnesty bill for the entire illegal alien population, including convicted criminals and human traffickers. And not just that, it calls for, on taxpayer dollar, bringing back the illegal aliens that were previously deported under President Trump's administration to be allowed to come back into the United States in order to also benefit from the amnesty. So they're telling you exactly who they are and what they would do. You're hearing a lot of rhetoric right now on being tough on the border to try to persuade, you know, maybe low propensity voters who aren't somehow don't pay attention to these things. But the results of the last 3.5 years are very telling about what you would get. And I think you would see an administration that's even more emboldened, and they would take more aggressive steps to facilitate and streamline the entry of more illegal aliens. And they would try to find new creative, unlawful ways to give them amnesty, get them on the voter rolls, and try to permanently alter the landscape of our elections going forward.
Well, that is the point, right? There is there are a few motivations for this, and one is to change the electoral landscape. The other is to change the cost of wages. They want to, you know, these folks that are in Springfield, Ohio, that are working reportedly for $19 an hour, if you add the actual median income and look at it on an hourly basis, you add in benefits, that's about half price. So you're getting labor for 50% of the cost and then saying Americans don't want the job. Well, Americans can't take the job for half price.
Right.
So you've got that motivation. You've got the kids. You've got the fentanyl, which is bringing massive amounts of profits. Somebody's making money here. I do not believe that we've lost 400,000 Americans to the fentanyl crisis. It's nothing other than a chemical weapon. I say it all the time. It's a chemical weapon that is being introduced into the United States to hurt our people. And you know, this is just so egregious. I struggle to even accept it. But you said something else in there that was crazy. You said part of the Harris plan is to go get people who had been deported and bring them back.
It's absolutely right. That's in the bill. If you read the bill, and it's specifically called for in the DNC platform. So they're hoping that you don't mention it, you don't read it, you don't understand it. But unfortunately for them, I've read the bill, and you know, I commented on it. Actually, was a rare, bizarre instance of one of my tweets that went viral. J.D. Vance got in on it. Elon Musk was reacting to it. It was insane. It's because you just can't believe it's true.
Right.
But when you read the bill text, it is very true.
Hey, Rob,
and that just is the most extreme radical position ever.
We are running up against the clock here. The music's about to start playing. We want to thank you for coming on the Conservative Voice. This has been a great conversation. We will post your social media contacts in our threads so people can find you, because and hopefully you'll return. We'd like to continue this conversation.
I enjoyed it very much. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.